Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And welcome everybody on YouTube to today's edition of Rewind to Dynamite. I am here sitting in the pilot seat. John is away on best man duty at a wedding, and I'm joined by Collision Courses, Kate from Montreal. Welcome to the free side of things, Kate.
Well, thank you for having me. I don't know if I did not remember that the theme song had that like massive bass in it. I was just noticing it in my headphones this time. Like, wow, this.
It's a bop.
I feel rocked.
As the kids say. Yes, that's right. We usually keep Kate, you know, nice and protected within the Post Wrestling Cafe paywall, but we've decided to let her free in on the free side of things. She does great work every single week with a rotating panel of hosts on Collision Course. So this is our chance to get to hear some of your thoughts on AEW on a free show. So I'm looking forward to our chat. We just spoke a little bit in the XL edition talking about today's news stories involving WBD announcing it is for sale and how that may potentially affect AEW down the line. Tony Khan's comments about Chris Jericho's future in AEW, Ridge Holland receiving further bad news about his health status, WWE's Money in the Bank being moved to a date that is not the same as AEW's All In weekend next year, an update on Nick Gage, and also some updates on Halloween Havoc and also Saturday night's main event. So all of that in the extended XL edition, which you can choose to listen to if you are a subscriber to postwrestlingcafe.com. With that said, a little bit of a plug for what we have on the free feed. Earlier today, if you're looking for your John Pollock fix, he did an edition of Pollock and Thurston just this afternoon, talking a whole lot about the Andrade situation and the legal ramifications of whether or not a one-year non-compete may be enforceable. Of course, a bit about Samantha Irvin and her revelation that she is currently undergoing a two-year non-compete as well. Also, a bit of a deeper dive into Brandon Thurston's study into how WWE ticket prices have doubled since the TKO merger, and more of Eric McGracken joined them as well to talk about the legality of some of these contracts, and also something about a little bit more information about the Muhammad Ali American Boxing Revival Act that's in there as well. So all of that is on Pollock and Thurston. Tomorrow, John Pollock will be with Neil Flanagan on Book Club. So he'll be in our Double Double and Espresso tier exclusives for those members. Kate, tonight's edition of Dynamite is our Fallout edition coming off of Wrestle Dream. Your quick thoughts on the pay-per-view?
I was impressed. I think I would struggle to remember a pay-per-view where the lows were as high as those ones were. Like, I think maybe it didn't have that sort of... There maybe wasn't like the sort of emotional high point or like a sort of match of the year candidate. Some of them were excellent. There wasn't one in particular that's sort of like, oh my God, this is so great. You have to go and see it. But all of it was really, really solid. I think, like a lot of the weak point for me was I thought that for the second time in a very short space of time, they kind of bungled a competitor for Mercedes by treating it as a surprise when it really shouldn't have been. The Mina Shirakawa and before that, Lacey Lane, like, you don't have to build these up, just announce them. And I think that with the speculation it's going to be Athena or it was going to be Siri coming over, it's got like it became it was unfortunately like you could feel the energy die down just a little bit. It was a very good match, but yeah, that's about the weakest point I can think of. I thought overall like a very high floor, shall we say.
Thoughts on the main event?
I think I'm going to be asking Amazon for a refund.
Oh, you were one of the people affected.
I got it through Amazon. Yes. Now the feed dropping out at the end, the thing was actually during the Mercedes and Mina match, I know that I had a problem and a lot of other people seem to as well with, something happened where it like dropped out. And then when you tried to get it started again, it just kept going back to the same point, dropping out again. And this went on for a while. So there are actually two interruptions. I have gone back and looked at the main event. I thought, you know, it was a lot of fun for me. I think it was like sort of what I wanted out of the match, the Sting appearance. Of course, that will always get me going. And I think you and John sort of spoke about the fact that there were some restrictions that applied here because of the regulations surrounding professional wrestling that made that sort of thing more difficult than it normally would be for AEW. There were more things that they had to keep in mind. And I think that they did as much as they could within those restrictions. I very much enjoyed it. I thought you could hear tonight how like Darby is always popular, but it did seem to elevate him just that much more. The reaction was that much hotter for him.
Not to mention just really the conversation surrounding the match. I mean, as expected, you know, it's a wide range of reactions to it. But mm-hmm. I continue to be surprised that like some people like maybe picked up on those restrictions. Because for me, I thought it was like the skewer into the nails, you know, as much as like,
yeah,
as, that was just a lot.
Oh, I thought that that looked incredibly. I guess I did see certain criticism online that like it didn't seem as intense as some of the other sort of I quit or death matches that we've seen from AEW in the past. So I think that's where that comment is coming from, that there were people who seemed surprised that it was toned down a little. I thought that they made up for what they weren't able to do by doing, as you said, the nail spot was a great example. And just, I actually liked the use of the fish tank. Like I thought that way, like, okay, you know, appropriate for the guy who has been trying to set everyone on fire, that he's going to get doused in water.
I thought you were going to say appropriate for the guy who's been talking about going fishing for years now.
Yeah.
God fishing.
Damn it, you are keeping me from my fishing vacation. Yes. I thought they told a very good story there. Very solidly enjoyed. I did think that the heel turn with Samoa Joe was very effectively done too, because I think that really caught me by surprise. Credit to Joe, who just did a phenomenal job of selling, like that he seems sort of broken up, like this is probably going to be my last chance at a big pay-per-view main event. Bravo, sir. Well done.
So let's go to tonight's edition of Dynamite here, coming to us from the Boeing Center at Techport in San Antonio, Texas. WrestleTix had this at 1830 tickets distributed, which, I mean, looks like an average number, but they at least sold everything that they put on sale because they also listed zero available tickets. So this is their first time in this building. Bryan Danielson is back here, and today just a part of a two-man booth here with Excalibur, with Tony Schiavone again doing interviews. So we see a little video from Hangman on Saturday, which they posted online after the event. He's at the trainer's room and he's very mad at Samoa Joe. And he says, when I find you, I'm going to ruin your goddamn life. So we start things off here with Samoa Joe in a trios title defense, taking on the Ops. So Shibata and Shelton start things off with some good mat wrestling here. Then we get a bit of a meat pairing with Lashley and Hobbs before Joe tags himself in to start instead. Did you read anything into
this? Great heat meal move. It's great heat move like that. Everyone was so clearly excited for Hobbs versus Lashley squaring off that it just sort of solidified his position as a heel. Yeah, I don't know if there was more to read into that. That the gesture towards Hobbs is very patronizing on his part.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, they certainly seem to be on the same page post-match, but I do wonder if this was meant to be a little bit of a tease to really tell us, like, you know, is Joe going to be a bit of a bigger dick to Hobbs? And is this going to be Hobbs's, you know, chance to eventually break out from this into
Feel like they've turned Hobbs a bunch already. Like, he's unfortunately hitting that Kevin Owens, like, is he going to be heel? Is he going to be a baby face? Like, it's getting a little dizzying.
So we go to commercial break, and the Ops take turns wearing Shelton out with holds. Lashley hot tags. He's in with Hobbs, who escapes the Hurt Lock. MVP finally comes in, and he gets a big reaction for the ball and elbow. He escapes the Kikina clutch, and he's about to hit the playmaker. But Ricochet comes down the ramp and distracts MVP on the apron, leading to MVP tapping out. So no title change, Cade. Did you have any expectations going in? Did this finish surprise you? And what are your thoughts on the match?
When I saw the Hurt Syndicate win, I assumed that, yes, the titles were changing hands. When I saw the heel turn, like, okay, no, they can't. Like, the heel turn's way too fresh. They need to make these guys look strong. You're not going to have Joe take a loss when you are building him up to a rematch for the world title. So, yeah, if you'd asked me at, like, 9 p.m. on Saturday, if I saw this being the ending, I would have said no. But in this case, yeah, it makes sense. It's the right move to keep them feeling hot. Doesn't mean that you can't go back to this. I do wonder how much juice there is left in the Hurt Syndicate versus the Demand. Like, you can't build that up anymore. Like, you've done everything you are gonna do. So
an I Quit match.
I think we need to sort of, the thing is, like, they had the street fight, which is really like not quite an I Quit match, but it's in the same, like, it's on that same tier of match.
No fish tanks, know. But
yeah. No.
Yeah, that was the one thing that stuck it to me. First of all, the match. I was interested to watch this one just to see. Well, I know what Samoa Joe looks like as a heel. I know what Hobbs looks like as a heel. I wanted to see how Katsuyori Shibata was wrestling as a heel. Mm-hmm. And the answer is exactly the same as he wrestles as a baby face. I mean,
the fact is he has almost a heelish style of wrestling normally. It's just that he comes off as like this cool killer. Much like Joe, but yeah, like I'm kind of excited for this. I want to see heel Shibata.
They wrestled essentially the same because even as babyfaces, the Ops were such a dominant, you know, Road Warrior style tag team. It was also interesting to see them go up against the Hurt Syndicate because they're another Road Warrior style tag team. So here you had instead Shelton Benjamin kind of doing the bulk of the selling throughout the commercial break. And even that felt novel because I'm not used to seeing Shelton sell so much within his AEW run. So that was kind of neat to see. I thought it was a fine match, not necessarily something I would recommend or anything, but I also was not much of a fan of seeing this Demand Hurt Syndicate feud going on because it just felt like we've had like what, five matches in various incarnations, and
you need to find something to do with both of them that isn't with each other.
Saturday just felt definitive, you know, like what more can we do? I don't want to see the answer to this anymore.
Yeah. I think like, unless you have some sort of swerve, no pun intended, planned, then this feels a bit stale right now. I think that like, if you had the Hurt Syndicate taking the titles, then yes, there's a new element that you can have to restart that feud. But in the absence of it, I don't know. I'm willing to be proven wrong, but this doesn't strike me as an exciting path for either team.
So afterwards, Shivani is interviewing Joe, who says it's a pleasure to be in San Antonio because with Hobbs around, it's a good thing there are fat San Antonio women to keep him occupied. Those are Joe's words, not mine.
I think that the funny, what I liked about that line was that people started to cheer until they realized that he meant fat at San Antonio women in a bad way. Like they seemed to be like, yeah, our big women got to, oh wait, that's, he's not, he doesn't mean that in a nice way. Like it just, it seemed like they were sort of cheering and then it just dropped.
Up to interpretation, I suppose. Joe says, people are asking why, Joe, why? And Joe says, it's because I exist. He says, as long as you're champion, I will come hunting for you. And at this point, the crowd starts chanting cowboy shit. Joe says, I'll slap Paige's cowboy ass and I'll make him his bitch. I'll make him my bitch, just like every team has made the state's teams their bitch. Okay, so very good delivery from Samoa Joe here, just to kind of further cement that heel status.
Yeah, I think just very sort of basic, make fun of the hometown kind of promo, but you see how good Joe is that he can turn that into something that is quite engaging. And yeah, anything that allows Joe to talk on my TV on a regular basis is a good plan as far as I'm concerned.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Renee is in the back with champion Chris Statlander, and she talks to Mercedes through the camera, says, I beat Toni Storm twice. Have you? I won the AEW title. Have you? She says, I'm a much, much more than the person you beat last year. I'm taking the title to new heights, and you're coming along for the ride. And she accepts their full gear match. Your thoughts on Chris Statlander's promo at the present time?
I thought she has shown a marked improvement. I find that she has shown a marked improvement in literally every aspect of her game in the last year or so. Like she has already, she was always good in ring, but you really have seen that like her rise from someone who should be in contention for a mid-card title to someone who really belongs. Like I think a lot of people felt that she was the right choice to beat Toni Storm. And yeah, I thought this was very good. Promos have never been her strong suit. This one struck me as one of the better ones that she's ever done. And yeah, I think the matches that she and Mercedes had last year were strong enough that I am looking forward to a rematch. Don't love the fact that they're both belt holders right now, because it essentially means that Full Gear, one of the, like the TBS belt, is not getting defended. But I look forward to the match. Yeah,
you're probably getting the tag team.
But will you though? Because it seems like Mercedes is, spoiler alert, you're for right. later in the show, okay. Mercedes is going to be involved in the tag tournament. So that, like, you could have a match on there, but I would guess that it wouldn't be the final based on who the players are.
So. Okay. Well, more discussion to come about those tag team brackets. We go up next to Darby Allin, who lays the Mount Everest flag on the mat. He says people said he was irresponsible before climbing Mount Everest, that he couldn't be the face of this company, but he feels that he's the opposite. He's willing to take this company to places it'll otherwise never go. He's willing to die for this place. He then takes off his robe to reveal the welts on his body from his I Quit match, and he says that he knows the Death Riders aren't just going to go away by him beating Jon Moxley. But he promises to them that as long as the Death Riders are breathing, Darby Allin won't be far behind. So just a very short, which I thought, but a very effective, I thought, you know, victory lap type of promo from Darby here.
Perfect Darby, like just ultimate Darbys. And it's one of the people who was always kind of hesitant on these crazy things he does, because I did think like, okay, you're going to get yourself well screwed up, son. Look, he keeps proving me wrong. So
Jurassic Express follow up their match, their win over the Bucks with a promo of their own. And this, this is it from the back, from pre-recorded from Saturday. Perry says, why did they choose to reunite right now? Well, they're here to reclaim things that they've lost, things that they thought were impossible to lose, like their name, their reputation, the feeling of wanting to give this everything you have. So they've also, Perry states that now they're here to take it all, including our world tag team titles. So I continue to really like this more mature version of Jack Perry being slotted back into, you know, what is very much a bit more of a juvenile feeling type of tag team with, you know, a boy and his dinosaur. But it seems like a more mature version of it. And I mean, I think it's really connecting with the crowd. Certainly the match told you that.
Yeah. And I think that they did a great job on Saturday in showing that they have a lot they have a lot that they can go to in terms of their in-ring. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Statlander improving on the in promos. Like, Perry was so good here. And he has, I like that, you know, he's kept that sort of cocky swagger that he had for the heel turn, but now he is a baby face. Still a little bit sneaky at times, but I think, yeah, the crowd clearly responding to this, so indeed, like they move into the conversation for the tag belts.
We go up next to a Four Corners tag team match here involving four of the teams that will be in the tag tournament. And they are Megan Bain and Penelope Ford, Julia Hart and Sky Blue, Willow Nightingale. I'm trying to remember their last names. They're like, I just call her Willow. Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, Queen Aminata and Jamie Hayter. So it's a four-way, but and where everybody is on opposite corners, but only two people can be in the match at once. So you get a lot of like creative ways of the teams that aren't involved tagging in. So we start off here with Penelope Ford stealing a tag from Sky Blue from the apron. She and Bane team up and they start beating Harley Cameron up. So Cameron goes to Jamie Hayter's corner to be saved. Hayter and Bane then deliver some very entertaining power stuff between the two of them. Bane and Ford deliver simultaneous tope and moonsault planchas as we go to commercial break. Willow then tags in, taking out both members of the Sisters of Sin. Megan Bane then tosses Ford into a cutter tosses her opponent into Ford's cutter. She held Ford, tossed her into her opponent for
into
a cutter.
Into her own cutter, yes.
Got it. They also hit a stunner into a double German suplex, so really Bane and Ford got a lot of the cool moves here in this match. Mm-hmm. Willow pounces Bane, Hayter blind tags Willow, Hayter then Aminata, and Aminata then come in, and their finish is this Headbutt followed by Haterade, with both of them trapping their opponent by the arms. I thought it looked very cool. Resulted in Hater pitting forward for the win in a pretty chaotic, but I thought a match that turned out pretty well as an appetizer for this tag tournament.
Yeah, I thought the only thing that kind of took me out of it a bit was when Penelope did the moonsault. It really did look like she actually hurt her arm. Like she kind of popped up. The ref is checking on her and she was sort of favoring it for a bit afterwards. I hope that that everything is okay. She's obviously still announced for the tournament because that team has to be among the favorites and one that you would expect to be an important part of a tag division going forward, even if they don't win this this tournament, even if they're not the inaugural champions. Yeah, the point of this was to show that all of these teams have some sort of cool team moves, which I thought, Hater and Aminata with that finish. Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing them doing that again. And I'm very interested to see where the tag tournament goes, and even more interested to see how the belts are maintained afterward, because that's the tricky part.
I too really liked what I saw out of Aminata and Hater, and I thought Bane and Ford really stood out here. You know, again, they had all the cool spots, and we'll talk about the brackets maybe a little bit later on and maybe discuss, you know, some predictions and also what your favorites might be. We go up next to the Young Bucks, who are outside of Tony Khan's office. They're looking for another money match. Renee asks what's next for them. This is when Tony Khan appears and he tells the Bucks that they he'll be willing to make a money match. It'll be $400,000 up for grabs, and it'll be between the Jurassic Express teaming up with Jetspeed, taking on the Bucks and FTR this Saturday on Collision. So FTR at this point come out of Tony's office. The Bucks acknowledge that the history has been a bit, you know, tense between the two. And Stokely gives Nick a $1 bill, telling him that you may need this more than we do. Yeah, what was the last interaction between the Bucks and FTR? Remind me, Kate. You remember?
I wish I could remember. It has definitely been a what was it? Oh my God, was it the first All in London? Was that the last time they?
I gotta look this up.
Because that was seen as like that was supposedly going to be the definitive match between them.
Right.
I don't know. That's the last one that stands out in my memory, but that's a while ago. I feel like they must have done something since then.
Well, I'll just say, like, I mean, in seeing them, so they had last had a three-way match at All in London 2024. Yeah. Bucks versus FTR versus the Acclaimed. Has it been that long? Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess like when they stepped in front of each other, I guess they haven't had interactions in quite a while. But like when they tried to like let us know that, oh, look at this pairing, I suppose I didn't think that there was anything the matter because I've seen both teams be heels for so long. I just assumed that they were friends. But it does make sense, I suppose.
As soon as I saw them together, it's like, okay. Yeah, like because I've come to accept them both as heels. But yeah, when they did the stare down, it's like, oh yeah, this is a much older story. I think long-term fans of AEW will sort of see the Bucks and FTR as part of the company lore, if you will.
Sure.
I think it's interesting. It's going to be interesting seeing them pair up because, of course, they're almost opposites in terms of their approach. So that's either going to result in a very complete team or a very fractured team.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident like Tony can just hit the randomizer and it could be any pairing, any match type involving like his entire roster, and you're going to probably get a banger.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this will be no different.
This may have been the longest Tony Khan appearance on AEW TV other than the Punk announcement. I'm not sure, but he does not make many appearances. Like he just usually like he's done quick announcements before, but actually interacting with people, I don't. Yeah, it's very uncommon for him.
So up next, we've got the Mercedes Moné 12 belts Moné celebration. And this is where Renee talks about Moné's big weekend involving CMLL title defense against Persephone on Friday, Wrestle Dream on Saturday, and then Sunday defeating Jody Threat at WPW, which Jack Wannan attended and has a great report up on the site. So we encourage you to read that. So she has apparently demanded the celebration, But the celebration is interrupted and started by Minnie Monet. Minnie Monet, of course, the puppet, puppeted by Harley Cameron here. Big Monet comes out. She's pissed off, tells Renee to get out, and she starts yelling at the puppet, calling the people in San Antonio stupid, dumb marks. That seems to be her new thing. And Monet says Cameron was desperate, first wanting to tag with her. Now she's mocking her. And the whole time Monet is talking to the puppet and not the person underneath the desk, which was pretty amusing here.
Yeah.
Monet then shoves Minnie Monet's head into the purple and yellow cake that is on the table. But before she can get her hands on Harley Cameron, Chris Statlander shows up, lifting Monet up in an electric chair position, dropping Monet face first onto the cake, followed by a choke slam through the cake and the table. The physicality, like as far as like pie, like or cake to the face spots go, I thought this turned out great here. Like the visuals were awesome.
I think, because they did the quick cheat with Harley, like, or Minnie Monet getting shoved in the cake at first. In general, this whole section was shot very well. Like, I thought you're going to get a lot of, I mean, you can see with the image that you're using, but this like Monet interacting with the puppet, they kind of shot it as if it was just her interacting with another wrestler. And as a result, it, like the visuals were quite striking. Look, Mercedes talking is never going to be her strong point. I do find that with the puppet, it does seem to bring something out in her that I find genuinely amusing. So yes, it still had those issues with repetitiveness that her promos always do, or sort of falling back on just one or two terms. But it was elevated again because the visual was so funny, and because Harley seems to be such a good foil for her. And yeah, that the electric chair into the cake spot when she looked up was, that is one of the better cake spots that I remember. And there's always a cake spot.
Yeah, I don't disagree that. Like, I mean, you know, certainly like Monet's reputation and like her perception among the AEW fans is very different now than compared to when she first appeared.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if her promo has gotten that much better, but I would say like. Listen, being a great wrestler, having an incredible catalog of wrestling, that does a whole lot for making your promos sound better. And I think we all maybe just like her more because of, that being the primary reason. But also, I think like they're protecting her a lot better by crafting segments where she says the lines that she says well, and that's really it, and she doesn't have to say that much more.
I give her credit for just like going off as if like she's talking to the puppet. Like that was sort of like, you would think normally she'd be trying to pull Harley out sooner, but no, she just does the entire segment talking to the puppet.
The chemistry with Cameron is great, and that actually will lead us into a first round match here in the tag tournament.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling. So, but first, we got a video from Jon Moxley. This was recorded right after the loss to Darby. He's in the dressing room. And he tells Darby, or he tells the camera that to Darby that your commitment to self-destruction was the deciding factor tonight. But one of these days, it's going to be your downfall. And he says, tomorrow, the Death Riders get back to work. Our commitment to being the best, our only competition is ourselves. And no one can hold us. Wait, my notes are all over the place. We hold a very high
exactly
standard.
What he said. Yes. Yeah, that's
we're
it.
We're very good, all right? Nobody can beat us.
We are the champions. Not right now, but we are.
Yeah. Honestly, the promo didn't really say much, but it did, I guess, give us some presence on the show. And it leads us directly to our match involving Jon Moxley. Jon Moxley versus Kyle O'Reilly here. So we start things off with some pretty fun grappling. Kyle delivers this flying armbar, which Moxley just breaks with a stomp to the head. So I wonder if they allow that at the NAGA tournament that he ended up winning. Through the commercial break, Moxley stomps Kyle's arm into the steel steps. Kyle comes back and delivers a dropkick to Mox off the apron. Mox breaks out of a triangle by catapulting O'Reilly's head into the bottom rope. O'Reilly then delivers another armbar, but Moxley breaks free and lariats with his good arm, followed up with a pile driver, which is immediately followed by a bulldog choke. O'Reilly avoids the paradigm shift, picks the ankle, and rolls into an ankle lock with a beautiful entry. Moxley then grabs referee Paul Turner at this point, and he just decks him with a forearm. This prompts the other refs to come out, and they call the match. So I believe this might be, is this the first in AEW, Kate? Like, we've had a DQ this way?
I think maybe. I'm not sure. Refs have taken, in particular, Paul Turner has taken bumps before.
But accidental bumps seem to be okay. When you're intentionally striking a ref, that prompts apparently all the other refs to come down, and they now have the jurisdiction to call them.
Forming a union. Look, I am as sick as anyone of these sort of screwy finishes with the Death Riders, but this was something different because normally they do a screwy finish in order to get to a victory. And that's not what was going here. This is Moxley knew he was going to lose and deliberately got himself disqualified. So I think it continues to build up this story that Moxley is falling apart. He's not able to perform it the way that he used to be. I've said this before on Collision Course, but kind of think they might be heading towards the Death Riders booting him out. And that's, you know, maybe not, but yeah, this is Mox. Like, there was a vulnerability there. He was going to lose the match. He chose to lose it on his terms.
Yeah, I love this finish. First of all, what a beautiful match these two had. I said it in the past, I think Kyle O'Reilly is like the best pro wrestler to blend jujitsu into his pro wrestling. And I thought this was a match that showed it. And
I feel like he's getting better with time too. Like, I'm not saying that he wasn't really good like a few years ago, but I feel the last like year or so since his return from like that long injury, there does seem to be another level to his in-ring.
Yeah, it to me is just kind of sad to see, though, like him like leading more into the comedy thing, and that's fine, but it's to me taking a real edge off of, like, you know, him being like a strong competitor. And I understand why, like, just being a strong competitor wasn't necessarily working out for him, and they want to give, you know, the character a bit more color, but it just has, it's not the type of Kyle O'Reilly I like. But on paper, you look at this and it's like, okay, a clear like rehab match for Jon Moxley beating Kyle O'Reilly after losing to Darby, but not quite. I mean, instead, they essentially used Kyle O'Reilly here to show that Moxley is now suffering, how I read it, some level of like PTSD from tapping out to Darby Allin, so much so that
to Hangman
afraid.
And then to Darby. Like, this is like, right. he's on a string of losses. Like, yes, he's had wins in the interim, but his last two big matches have both been losses by tapping out.
Mm-hmm. So now he's like completely afraid of tapping out. And Kyle O'Reilly, somebody who's like very low, at least in comparison to Moxley in the pecking order, now presents himself as the Achilles heel to Jon Moxley currently suffering from this. I thought that was wonderful storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it immediately to me, will catapult Kyle into some level of prominence if they want to continue to push him there. Obviously, you're going to get a rematch of some sort. But I really like the storytelling here with Moxley. Like, to me, this is even better than the Page, the follow-up to the Page loss, because it shows that he's actually suffering some consequence from losing this match to Darby. Yeah, so this all leads us to Death Riders and Conglomeration brawling ringside, and it takes us to our very next match, which happens to be a trios match involving three members each of the two factions. We've got Daniel Garcia and Wheeler Yuta and Claudio Castagnoli taking on Mark Briscoe, Orange Cassidy, and I suppose not officially still a member of the Conglomeration, Roderick Strong. What do you think of their new opening video with the 96
as someone who has absolutely hated the sort of cringy comedy that they've been doing, it I have to say the vibe that they went for here, they absolutely nailed it. Like, this really does look like the intro to sort of late 80s, early 90s sitcom, everything about it. I love the fact, like, guest starring Roderick Strong. Like, yeah, I'm still not sold on the comedic value of all this. And as we've discussed, I think in particular, it's kind of holding O'Reilly and Strong down. However, this clearly was an improvement on it, and yes, does make it a little more, I think gives a little more reason to want to see Strong join up with the others. So I don't know, I'm not sold on it yet, but yes, this does improve things overall in my mind.
I just want to know, like, how they're giving Tomohiro Ishii this level of instruction. Like, how are they communicating to this man? We want you to sit in front of a piano and play.
I like to think that these are all his ideas. Like, in my fantasy world, Ishii is just driving all of this. Like, yeah, I'm going to play piano. You stand there. So, like, we're going to do this whole thing. Like, video I remember from American sitcoms. Like, yeah, in my fantasy world, Ishii is kind of the engine room for all of this.
He definitely seems like a big Full House fan. So we go to our match here. We've got the Conglomeration versus the Death Riders in a trios match. The crowd is still really hot, trailing off of the last match. So the Death Riders isolate Roderick Strong in his corner through a commercial break. This is when Orange comes in. He's followed by Mark Briscoe, and they get their shine against the Death Riders, with Briscoe delivering a corkscrew senton to the floor. Everybody delivers big moves now. Yuta is about to go for cattle mutilation. Briscoe counters with a lariat and a J-driller as the Conglomeration win. But at this point, Pac immediately attacks, and this is when our favorite pianist, Tomohiro Ishii, comes in for the save. Mox is back out to distract them, allowing Marina Shafir to low blow Ishii. They clear the table as Claudio is about to do that same toss, you know, that Mike Awesome type of toss to Orange Cassidy onto the table. But this is when Darby Allin comes back. He delivers
because
a baseball
Darby was
back.
Jealous of Claudio doing it to someone else.
You can only toss me through a table, okay? Yes. He delivers a baseball bat to Claudio's knee, followed by Orange delivering the Orange Punch, and the Death Riders retreat again. So like you mentioned, Kate, you know, clearly telling some sort of story of the Death Riders losing their edge, no longer really being feared. The Conglomeration are taking them apart now. So what is the fallout of this loss to Darby Allin for Jon Moxley?
And yeah, and what will it mean? Like, is it going to fracture the Death Riders as a group who, I think, particularly with turning the ops, it makes sense to kind of break up the Death Riders to me because they're such similar groups. And right now, the ops seem to be kind of...
They brew beer.
Yes, exactly. One of them has to have a move called an IPA then.
Oh, love it. John Conchester likes that one.
But yeah, I find that they're such similar groups. And the ops are kind of the ascendant heels right now. No, Joe is probably not going to capture the world title, but I think you can, having them as really solid heels in the trios division may help with those titles. God knows the titles need it. And so yeah, I think that you want the Death Riders to be different now.
So would you keep the group together, and who would you have lead it?
The Death Riders?
If not Mox.
Oh, it seems early for Garcia, although he's kind of the most obvious one because he was the one who said he joined up because he didn't want to be a loser anymore. And so he's the one who would who would clearly be most affected, this idea like, hey, I joined you guys and now you're losing too. Like, what the hell is with this? I don't know if I get that leader quality from him. In the back of my mind is, we don't know where Gabe Kidd is going in January. And he's someone who has been associated with that, I think, has much more of that leader potential in him. You could do Pac as the head of the Death Riders, and certainly as arguably the meanest one of them. That makes some sense. And someone who has been with AEW since the beginning, had that sort of idea that this is a group that is trying to force everyone in the company to improve themselves. I don't know. Like, there's some options.
I think Pac has been very like underutilized as a great promo in the body of this group, and that's just because Moxley is already so great. You know, you don't really have much of a need for Pac, but I like, as far as somebody who might be able to like live up to like this sort of like very like scary tone that Jon Moxley seems to embody, I feel like Pac might stand the best chance.
Yeah.
We'll see. So Mercedes Moné, she appears with a face full of cake here.
Of cake. She's been wandering around for like half an hour with cake on her face.
She says, well, she is met by Athena, who, like, when was the last time Athena showed up on AEW TV?
Oh, it would have been right before the match with Toni Storm, I think.
Yeah, like those ECW shows, I feel. Anyway, so she's met by Athena in a parking lot, it looks like. She says they're both here to build their legacies, with her being the longest reigning ROH champ and Moné being Ultimo Moné. She says it's time we do this again, but as AEW World Tag Team Champions. Moné is still composing herself, and she says, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Title number 13. Sounds good. So really a last-minute addition, it seems, to this tournament, but it's a big one here with Mercedes Moné and Athena officially entering this tag team tournament. And I swear we will talk about the brackets soon enough. But first, we talk about Kyle Fletcher and Don Callis, who come out here. Kyle Fletcher says he's defended the TNT title 6 times in a few months and says Mark Briscoe and his feud is done. There will not be another. Briscoe, though, however, feels
which
different.
Is always like code for this feud is not done.
Oh, goodness. Mark Briscoe comes back out and Kyle Fletcher for one more shot and something about icing his balls, which I didn't really note here, but he's asking for one more shot.
I think you captured the gist of it.
Don Callis calls him desperate. Doesn't know how he focuses with 10 kids at home. I'll say I have no idea how he does that. Don Callis says having 10 kids is not a family. That's a financial burden. Not like the Don Callis family where we all support each other. Callis says no to the challenge. So we are left with what seems to be a continued story here of how Mark Briscoe will get one more shot at Kyle Fletcher. Your thoughts on the continuation of the feud?
I don't know that I love the continuation of the feud because I don't buy into the idea of Mark Briscoe being the one to take that belt off Kyle. And I think that, like, the thing is, like, both of them put in a ton of work. So if you want that belt to be the one that is the most frequently defended, then yes, either one of them makes sense. It's just I feel like whoever takes the belt off Fletcher has to be someone you are looking to really elevate, but also it's in the same way that this is intended to build him up. You want to continue that with the next title holder. All that said, I really enjoyed their match at Wrestle Dream. I did feel like they had something left in the tank. So I guess this is the full gear match. I wouldn't object to seeing it on TV before then, though. Like, I think that this could be a top tier TV match as opposed to a really solid mid card match at Full Gear.
Well, you certainly know that feuds don't end on even numbers. You know, we can't get a best of six. There has to be a seventh. So expect at least 2 more matches out of this feud. I wouldn't mind these two having another match, but not this soon. You know, like again, like 5 feels to me, especially like going half an hour on Saturday. Like it just feels like that was definitive enough for this period that I just. I don't really have much interest in it. And I think there are just so many other challengers for Kyle Fletcher that I think would be a bit more fresh and a bit more interesting. And maybe even for Mark Briscoe at this point, you know? Briscoe, I think they've just beaten too much to really feel like a...
Yeah, I think the Briscoe, incredible. Like, if you're going to have the conglomeration doing group stuff, have them do group stuff. Like, have them doing these sort of matches versus the Death Riders. Have them doing matches versus the Don Callis family, for that matter. Like, it's... They are a group of very likable baby faces right now. I don't know that this is the most exciting program you could have. I'm sure I could think of people I would like Fletcher to be taking on. Like this one just sort of feels like they're treading water.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And finally, we have the reveal of the brackets for the long-awaited AEW Women's World Tag Team Championship Tournament. They are, on one side, Queen Aminata and Jamie Hayter taking on the Sisters of Sin, as revealed in that match earlier. Then we also have, on the same side, Willow and Harley Cameron taking on Mercedes Moné and Athena. So that'll have Moné and Harley Cameron with a bit of a interaction in their match coming off of the kick to the face. On the other side of the brackets, we have Alex Windsor and Riho taking on Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. This is, of course, interesting since Windsor and Toni are supposed to be partners themselves and friends. Will they tell any bit of a story? You know, did Alex Windsor maybe, did she intend to ask Toni, but Mina was able to ask first? And does she feel upset about that? I mean, I'm curious to see if they'll tell that.
Yeah, it's the one truly random pairing in this. And I was hoping we'd avoid those.
And then we have Megan Bain and Penelope Ford taking on Ty J as the last match in the bracket. So looking at this right now, do you have any clear favorites and maybe your pick? In the finals, can we ask?
I say that we're getting Moné and Athena versus Storm and Shirakawa as the final, with Storm and Shirakawa winning and this leading to kind of a meltdown where they do Moné and Athena as title versus title.
That's a very fair pick. And it certainly makes sense being like, you know, the biggest stars here. I see Toni and Mina advancing, and I could see them facing Bane and Ford. I also think this is your chance to like really make one of these other teams. You know, Toni is already established. You can argue Mina is already established, but like a team like Bane and Ford could really use it. Ty J could really use it, you know, although
given who they're up against, Ty J are going out in the first round, which is a bit of a shock. They were the first ones to declare for the competition. So maybe I'm hoping they use that to do some character development with them. I'm just looking at this and like, I don't know. You want a sort of babyface heel dynamic going into the finals. So if you're looking at heels on the one side with Storm and Shirakawa, like it's Penelope and Megan, but then the babyfaces on the other side, like do I see Harley and Willow beating Moné and Athena? I don't know. It seems like a bit of a stretch to me, but.
Interesting. Again, certainly the biggest match will be Moné and Athena taking on Storm and Shirakawa. I also feel like it might be a missed opportunity. Like rather than push two single stars in a team, push one of your actual tag teams that's going to last in this division, right?
Yeah. So I guess the only thing is like maybe you do want Storm and Shirakawa together for a while, if only to keep Toni Storm out of the world title picture, which is going to become a challenge because she's such a big star. You can't keep her out of the picture. But you don't want to rush her back into the world title scene right away.
Are there any obvious absences from the tournament that you might have been expecting that aren't a part of these brackets?
I guess like I was thinking that Athena and Billy Starks would be the team I figured Athena would be part of this. It's just that I thought that she was going to be with Billy. I like the way that they went, although again, feels like a temporary thing. I would say that I'm trying Everybody to think of specifically what other teams like. They seem to make sense. Yeah. The only one that sort of stands out to me is Windsor and Riho seems very random. I was kind of hoping that we'd get Hikaru Shida back pairing with someone. Pairing her with Riho would be one thing. I like this. A couple of people were mentioning Riho and Nyla Rose as a possible tag team. And I would have liked to see that. the first two women's champions, obviously the size difference would make them just sort of amusing to look at.
Obviously, all of this, you know, is occurring with Blood and Guts looming in the background as well, which will probably involve, you know, like many of the participants in this tournament. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how they pivot to that coming out of some of the other matches that are taking place here. We get up next, Renee with Mina Shirakawa, where she calls her team with Toni Storm the Timeless Love Bombs. Tekla then shows up to taunt her. Mina says, "I fought you in Japan, and I'll fight you here on Collision." And Tekla says, "Sure." So that is a match we're getting on Collision. And we actually have a pretty hefty lineup for a Collision that is currently being taped right now, if not already taped at mm-hmm. the time of recording. Hangman Page will speak. Tekla versus Mina Shirakawa. Pac versus Tomohiro Ishii. Hook is in action. And a $400,000 eight-man tag featuring the Bucks and FTR taking on Jet Speed Express. So, Kate, you'll be talking about that show in the Post Wrestling mm-hmm. Cafe with Nate Milton this week.
Indeed. Looking forward to it.
Good-looking show, I thought. Good-looking card, mm-hmm. at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our main event tonight is Bandido versus Kazuchika Okada for the Unified Championship. This match, of course, was made after Bandido pinned Okada on Saturday. And Bandido's mom is here, and you know what that means in 2025 when you have family members ringside. Bandido's mom is here, and Okada attacks Bandido's injured shoulder right in front of her. Okada slows things down during commercial break, working over Bandido's shoulder. Bandido fights back, and the crowd is just so hot for this guy. He delivers a frog splash that gets a two count. Okada again goes to the shoulder to regain control, delivers a tombstone shoulder breaker. Bandido then goes over to the ringside physician to look at his shoulder, but Okada tears him away and continues beating on him inside the ring. Bandido then attempts a one-armed X knee and then hits the 21-plex. Okada, though, stops the next attempt using a dropkick. He then goes for the Rainmaker, but Bandido counters with this almost like a diving small package for a two count. I thought that looked awesome.
Yeah.
Bandido at this point is still fighting with one arm. He dives into the corner and Okada just drops him with his like this sort of shotgun dropkick coming out of the corner. Bandido then looked awesome. Bandido then counters the Rainmaker with a Rainmaker of his own. The crowd is just completely just on fire right now. Bandido delivers another X knee. He goes for the 21-plex again, but Bandido is too far from the ropes. Okada grabs his wrist and delivers the Rainmaker for the win. And I mean, a great match. You know, these Okada TV matches, to me, I don't know if they always deliver up to my expectation, but I thought this was one of the better Okada matches we've seen on TV.
Yeah, definitely. I thought this was really good. Would these two on a pay-per-view deliver a higher level match? Yes, and they should. That is the idea behind putting your big matches on pay-per-view. But to just kind of add this in with a story behind it, there's a perfectly good reason why Bandido is getting a title shot. This was an excellent match, and this absolutely earned its main event status. I really like the chemistry that these two have. Like, you saw some of it in the tag championship match. You saw it here. There is something about the two of them that where they just come together really well. I think matches like this let the Okada's kind of heel shtick works way better when you're also seeing him do Okada stuff. When you're seeing him do the sort of the kind of high level performance that you got here.
I'm curious. Do you want to reveal, like, do you have a wrestler of the year so far?
I mean, I think I would give it to Takeshita just because of the fact that he has been active in dual promotions and doing so well in both. Bandido will be up there, though. Like, it's, that's a thing. ROH. Do think CMLL. It's not a runaway for Takeshita. I would probably give it to him. But I was thinking of the prestige of winning the G1. I'll say that. But Bandido would be a very close second. Like, those two would be my choices. I might go, I mean, we'll see what happens before the end of the year. I could go either way. The match they had together on ROH is just mind-blowing. Highly recommend it to anyone who just wants to see a great wrestling match.
Yeah.
Although not even my favorite Bandido match of the year.
No, that's why I think he, you know, that's why I brought it up, because like I think this is just another match that showed like how good he is right now, and how he is rightly talked about as being the best in the world at the moment. And it's just crazy to me that like Tony Khan has both of these wrestlers on his roster.
Yeah.
And he can just like, he'll make this match for Ring of Honor of all things, you know. And oh, it's just amazing.
And kind of out of nowhere, like off like a sort of mixed, like off of a tag match that happened on Dynamite, just had Takeshita challenge Bandido for the title, and they had one of the better matches I've seen this year.
But as a vehicle for to push Bandido as like this sort of singles prospect, I mean, Brodito has been just such a great project for both he and Brody King, and you see the effects here in the singles match where, I mean, against Kazuchika Okada, this card was going nuts for Bandido. So as soon as they break up this team, he's in good shape, you know.
And I guess this is what, to go back to what we were saying about Briscoe and Fletcher. To me, Bandido has to be one of the favorites to take that belt off Fletcher, and probably when he's done the tag run. So this is where what I'm saying is, like, there are better people you need to be queuing up for that belt.
Yeah. So after this match, we have the entire Don Callis family coming out to celebrate this big win over Bandido, I suppose.
Not all of them.
Not all of them, because coming last is the IWGP champion himself, Konosuke Takeshita, who does not look too happy about the Don Callis family celebrating with Okada. He's at the top of the ramp and looking pretty angry about what Okada did to him on Saturday. Much so that it requires Don to go up there to have to calm him down. So they're continuing to... Well, Danielson, I thought, was great on commentary, pointing out that Okada was able to do something Takeshita couldn't do this year, and that's beat Bandido. So all goes back to Bandido. What did you think of tonight's Dynamite?
I thought generally really strong, that the main event kind of was... If I'm going to tell someone to check out one thing from the show, it's absolutely that. And also the fallout afterwards, I think that we are building very well to Okada versus Takeshita. This has been brewing for a while, and I think they're handling it pretty deftly. I look forward to seeing what happens with the women's tag brackets. I'd like to see some kind of schedule for that, because I feel like they were announced and now we've got brackets. Like, could we have dates? Like, could we know how this is going to be unfolding?
So they did say it starts next week. That's about as much as we know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'd kind of be more interested to know when it's finishing, because when it's finishing, we'll sort of determine when a lot of other people are freed up for feuds for either the World or TBS title.
Could be that. Could be just that they don't want to reveal, you know, who might be in the finals, now knowing that Monet and Statlander is going to be a full gear match. But I thought it was a good Dynamite, you know, certainly it gave you some good in-ring content. And I thought it gave you a lot of, like, good development towards, like, the next cycle of matches, whether it be TV or the pay-per-view. I think good follow-up as well, you know, to Wrestle Dream. No obvious, like, sort of opponents for, like, a Darby Allin coming up next, although you might read into this the continuation of that feud with Jon Moxley. So we'll see. That was something I wasn't necessarily the happiest about, was seeing like this sort of like extension of a lot of feuds that I felt almost ended at Wrestle Dream. That being Hurt like Syndicate versus The Demand, and also this Mark Briscoe Kyle Fletcher feud.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'm wondering with Mox and Darby is that a setup for a men's Blood and Guts match? But
yes. Right.
Like I could see that. On the other hand, we've already seen Darby in one of those. We've already seen Darby get a win in a Blood and Guts match. Like I'm less interested in a men's match of that kind. You're seeing as they put so much into building the women's. It's like, just let them have the spotlight for this one. Just do one match. So yeah, I don't think you can go back to Mox versus Darby as a singles match at all. I mean, like, not in the near future.
No way.
Of course you could at some point, like,
but, well, in a different state. Like, it's okay, out of Missouri. You can always promote, hey, we're the non-Missouri State Athletic Commission sanctioned
it's sort of, you know, like a drive nails into your opponent match. Like, I think that they need some fresh sheets. And coming up to Full Gear, which is really supposed to be one of their big pay-per-views, like, this is something where even sort of although I think that the story is obviously much better going in, even having your men's world title match be kind of a repeat is
That one's fresh though, because you're getting a drastic character change in Joe, right?
No page
on this one other than just the promo from after on Saturday, but he'll be speaking on Collision. So you'll be talking about
that. Kind of a smart idea to keep those two completely apart at this point. Like you'll have a chance to have them reconnect.
Kate from Montreal will be back on Saturday in the Post Wrestling Cafe with Nate Milton this week, talking about the other half of this show, that being AEW Collision. So we say goodbye at this point to the free side of things. I hope you guys join us for the rest of the Post Wrestling Cafe exclusives this month, and we will talk to you guys on Friday. Let's go over to the Post Wrestling Cafe and feedback.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.